Thank you for the invitation. I think this is on, right?
Yeah, it's more for recording than for...
Oh, okay. So I'm going to talk about a few ideas I've been playing with in light dark matter. And the theme is that these ideas are mechanisms that let us go beyond what we think these dark matter particle, these dark matter candidates should appear. And I should say maybe that I'm not trying to say that these mechanisms are maybe are the things that are going on in the universe. The idea here is more to build mechanism to see how robust are our narrow target spaces that we have set up, and how much does it take to get away from these preferred places. And then once we build those mechanisms, we can make up our minds. This looks too baroque for this to be anywhere close to reality. So maybe this is not as motivated as something else, and so on. But before getting to dark matter, the current state of the art in standard model is the in particle physics is the standard model, and now after the discovery of the Higgs boson, we can extrapolate the standard model of particle physics to arbitrarily high energies. And so the question is, if there's physics beyond the standard model, where does it lie? And here's my cartoon of the space where it could lie, where on the x-axis is our energy scales, all the way from the Hubble scale to the Planck scale. And on the y-axis is a cartoon of its interaction with us. So we know that it should interact with us gravitationally, or it could have some notion of order one interactions with us. And so in this space, the question is, where do we expect new physics to show up? And we have a number of hints, and I'll cut a long story short, to populate this cartoon. So we have evidence from stability of the weak scale that maybe there should be new physics around the weak scale. So there's a number of ideas that go with physics at weak scale coupled to us at order one strength, motivated by the hierarchy problem. There's of course dark matter, which motivates physics beyond the standard model, and in particular, for most of my talk, I'll talk about axions as dark matter candidates, which are motivated by something called the strong CP problem in the standard model, and we know at the Planck scale, at least the theory of quantum gravity should come in, and it's not clear what that theory could be. One possible candidate is the string landscape, and all these different directions tell us where we could find new physics. And so this is my cartoon of the discovery frontier, where experiments push along this frontier in some way. And the experiments involved are experiments such as collider physics, astrophysics experiments, cosmology experiments of CMB, and tabletop experiments such as axion searches and other low-scale tabletop experiments. And now even gravitational wave detectors are something we have access to study fundamental physics. So this is really a broad enterprise. This involves physics over different scales, different kinds of physics, different kinds of disciplines, and different experiments. And so this motivates a sort of broad program to try and find where the next clue to fundamental physics might come from. For this talk, I'm going to focus on dark matter. And this is something, this particular image is something everybody has seen a thousand times. And the point of this, I don't know if you can make out all the faint things, but I think you've seen those too, so it probably doesn't matter. The point of this picture is to say that astrophysical and cosmological evidence for dark matter is overwhelming, and it comes to us from disparate timescales, from Big Bang nucleosynthesis, from the CMB, and more recent epochs from the observation of clusters and galactic rotation curves, and they all point to the need for some matter beyond the standard model, and they all some kind of dark matter neatly fits into all these observations. So it's really compelling that there is something like dark matter out there. From the particle physics point of view, the number of possibilities, the space of possibilities for what this dark matter particle could be, is truly vast. So here's my cartoon of what the space of ideas is. This is necessarily incomplete, but there's a vast number of ideas that people have put forward of what could constitute this dark matter. And the mass scale for dark matter itself spans many, many orders of magnitude, all the way from, can span many, many orders of magnitude, all the way from galactic scales to solar masses. So these are this is truly a truly a large range of masses, and qualitatively this splits up into three things. For masses below a EV or so, dark matter couldn't be fermions because it wouldn't fit into our galaxies because of Fermi degeneracy pressure, and so it's bosonic, and the occupation number is more than one per mode, and so really the appropriate description for these candidates is in terms of classical fields rather than particles. On the other hand, for masses above M Planck, of course, we don't think that these can be fundamental particles, so these should be composites. Either they could be aggregates of fundamental particles with masses here, like the Earth or the Moon, or they could be black holes or other kind of exotic but not fundamental particle-like matter. And in the middle is particle dark matter, and of which WIMPs is a subset, which is motivated and so has received a lot of experimental and theoretical attention. Today, I'm going to focus on dark matter candidates, which are in this category. These are classical fields below an EV or so. And since they behave qualitatively differently from all the other dark matter candidates, we need to think about them separately for the strategies to search for them, and how do we think about them in theoretical model building. This is of course all basic stuff, but if there are any questions, please feel free to stop me anyway. So we're going to be talking about bosonic sub-EV dark matter today, and there again these break up into a number of well-motivated models, and they're basically categorized by why these particles happen to be light. So, for example, a number of these models are light because they are pseudo-Nambu-Goldstone bosons. So there's some approximate shift symmetry that protects them. The prototypical example of that is the QCD axion, which is perhaps one of the most well-motivated models in this category. But there could be other particles which are similarly protected by a shift symmetry. They could be light. So all of these are pseudo-scalars often, and they tend to behave similarly to each other. We could have light spin-1 particles. Spin-1 particles can be massless, or they could have like the photon, or they could have a tiny mass, and so they could also be dark matter candidates. Or we could have very weakly coupled scalars, so these particles are light because they're extremely weakly coupled to us, say gravitational strength. And the exciting thing is that all these candidates appear ubiquitously in theories of quantum gravity, with theories of extra dimension, with the extra dimensions are compactified, just naturally drop out all these particles, light bosonic particles. And so in principle, there's not a scarcity of such candidates from the UV point of view. The QCD axion, as I mentioned, is probably one of the most motivated candidates among these, and it's motivated as a solution to something called the strong CP problem in the standard model. And I'll just give you a very quick run through of what that problem is. Essentially, there's a strong CP phase in the standard model, which is a function of the Yukawa coupling matrices and a theta angle. These are all parameters of the standard model, and this particular combination is what is known as an invariant contribution, combination, and this has been measured to be less than 10 to the minus 10. And in the absence of any symmetry, you'd expect this to be an order one number. And so this is known as the strong CP problem. There's no symmetry reason in the standard model. We have CP violation at order one. We have all these Yukawas non-zero. So why is this parameter so small? And the solution to this problem, one of the solutions to this problem, is to make this parameter in the standard model a dynamical field. This dynamical field is the axion. And QCD generates a potential for the axion, which is centered around theta bar equals zero, to a very good approximation. So dynamically, even if we started in the early universe with some value which is non-zero, QCD will drive this field down to theta equals zero, thereby explaining the non-observation of neutron EDM. And there's only one free parameter in an axion model, which is, well, roughly speaking, there's one free parameter in the axion model, which is given by this parameter FA. So in particular, FA sets the is like the decay constant of the axion, and so it sets its couplings to matter, standard model matter, photons and gluons and so on, and it sets its mass through this potential.
So for future experiments, how clear is the constraint supposed to get for theta bar? Things you know.
Sorry, it's a good question. I think it's an order of magnitude better, but do you remember, Matt? Maybe somebody in the room remembers of how much better would the neutron EDM constraint going to get?
Oh, this is, if things work, right, these are extremely challenging things. Just, you don't get enough, right now controlled by statistical error. You don't have enough cold neutrons. We're building a source in Canada. We, as a community, would it work? We have no idea.
And but there's also some way to measure it using mercury, right? And I don't know how much.
Yeah,
what the
mercury is sensitive on a similar level, but I don't think this experiment. I think all the PIs on this experiment have retired, so I don't know if it's still going to go. So it's a cycle.
Right. So I think that there's of course exciting proposals to measure time variation of neutron EDM, which can be much more sensitive to the DC value. I don't think you're going to get much better directly. If you could have people here have written down papers with fifth force using, which are sensitive to what that value of this parameter is. So you can have fifth force between nucleons. It's like a monopole dipole force. And the monopole-dipole nature arises precisely by plugging in one value of theta bar. And so that's sensitive to theta bar. So if we see that force, we'd measure theta bar and the axion and find the axion at the same time. So
that's better than the neutron EDM.
Well, I guess you see the sensitivity is 10 to the minus 16. Is that right for Ariadne?
Who knows? It's an experiment that's not being built, right?
I just can't say whatever. Theoretically speaking,
you can get better than 10 minus 10, like 2 or 9 or something.
So as we motivated, the axion is a dark matter candidate, and its abundance actually depends only on a few details of cosmology. So there's a few mechanisms by which axions could be populated to be dark matter. And perhaps one of the simplest ones is a misalignment mechanism, where in the early universe you set the axion away from its minimum, which you expect it to be, because the early universe has no access to where the eventual QCD minimum is going to be. And as the universe cools down, the axion which is stuck away from its minimum starts oscillating, and this oscillating scalar field clumps like dark matter, redshifts like dark matter, is indeed a dark matter candidate. You could also have, and you can have variants of this misalignment mechanism, one of which I will mention, which is goes by the name of particle production. And you could also have production of axions from topological effects like strings and domain walls. I won't go into that in too much detail today. So for the misalignment mechanism, as we said, the axion is set away from its minimum in the early universe. There's one small wrinkle in the case of the QCD axion, that the potential of the axion itself depends on temperature. So in the very early universe, at very high temperatures, the potential is essentially flat. So this is this dashed line up there. And around the QCD phase transition, this potential turns on. And so that these dips become stronger and stronger, and then the solid line is the zero temperature QCD potential, QCD axion potential. And so the axion is stuck somewhere here, and at some point when the Hubble matches the local mass of the axion, it starts oscillating. And the energy in that oscillation is just the mass squared times the amplitude squared, which is this quantity. And then from then on, the number density of the axion is conserved. So we can take this initial energy density and redshift it to today. And this is what we find. We get the right relic abundance of axion dark matter for F around 10 to the 12 GeV if the misalignment of its of the initial value was order 1 from its minimum. So this one parameter model where FA was the only free parameter is now reduced to almost a zero parameter model here. So this is what I alluded to earlier, that the axion, QCD axion, gives us a very narrow target space for which to look for. And typically, QCD axion phenomenological plots look like this, where on the x-axis you have the mass of the axion, on the y-axis you have 1 over FA, this thing that sets its coupling. And as we said, the mass of the axion for QCD is decided by what the value of FA is. So there's a line here on which the QCD axion is supposed to lie. And now if I ask for the right relic abundance of dark matter with order 1 misalignment, it also picks out the scale FA, which is around 10 to the 12 GeV. So that gives us a very nice target to look for the axion. And indeed, there are experiments, cavity experiments, that are built to actually go after this preferred point by using couplings of the axion to photons. So you have the parameter that's order 1 is what is the angle, so there's a cosine potential that you have, and so the dimensionless angle that they're misaligned by is an order 1 number. So you're basically generically somewhere on the 0 to 2 pi on your cosine. That's what's order 1, that's what theta I is, and that's what order 1. Minimum map in this plot? Nothing really. I mean, I've just chosen some range. These are motivated because perhaps going beyond the Planck scale for FA is problematic, but one could imagine going there. And there are astrophysical constraints that come in around this value of about 10 to the 9 GeV for FA. And so this part of the QCD axion space is excluded by various experiments. As it gets heavier, then it becomes more decays of mesons and things like that. But there's no room for the QCD axion to lie above, say, something like 0.1 EV or something like that, or even smaller. At some point, it can't be dark matter, of course, because around an EV, around roughly an EV scale, or beyond, it starts decaying within the cosmological time through its coupling to photons. So this is probably the most motivated parameter space, but you could certainly imagine expanding that. And so what this cartoon is supposed to show is trying to build mechanisms to take this preferred point and extend it in different directions, and to see how much work it takes to extend them in different directions. So I guess I was here a year ago, and then what I was talking about then was going in this direction, so off the QCD axion line to make the axions heavier using UV instantons, which is in this paper with Kyle Howe. So I won't repeat that story today, but what I'll try to show you is a mechanism to move this point to larger values of FA. And larger values of FA, in principle, are motivated because these top-down constructions of quantum gravity actually tend to give you axions with larger values of FA, FA around 10 to the 16, 10 to the 15 GeV, rather than 10 to the 12 GeV. So if there are nice mechanisms to make you to let you go down in this region, perhaps that's interesting. Further, there are experiments that are proposed that are going to only be sensitive to axion dark matter around this region. So it's worthwhile considering models or mechanisms that can let you go down here. I should note that you could just tune the initial misalignment angle by hand and say, I can get down here by just saying that this number that I'm setting to order 1 is not order 1, but something small. But it would be nice to see if there are mechanisms rather than tuning that let you get there. And this direction up here really corresponds to enhancing the QCD axion coupling to photons. And this is a coupling that's really relevant for experiments. For example, cavity experiments look for the axion using the photon coupling. And typically, that coupling is roughly, is more or less fixed by what the value of FA is. And so the question is, can that coupling be much larger? And again, in particular, there are experiments which are maybe not sensitive to values of FA all down here, but they're sensitive to values of FA down up here. Are those experiments worth doing or not? If they're not really sensitive to the QCD axion, but they're so there, if there are mechanisms that can let you increase the coupling of the QCD axion to photons, then perhaps that motivates those experiments further. And so this mechanism that really lets you parametrically enhance this coupling goes by the name of the clockwork mechanism. And it's a module that's actually a field theory module that's used in many places, including the mechanism for particle production. And so this comes up again and again. So I maybe want to spend a slide introducing the clockwork mechanism, and then I'll go on to discuss this dark photon production. So the clockwork mechanism, sometimes also called the alignment mechanism, is the idea that you have an axion coupling to two different gauge groups, could be gluons and photons, but with parametrically different strengths. The idea is that you have two, the way you construct such a model is that you have a two axion model. So you have an axion A and an axion B coupling to their own gauge groups, FA and FB. And they get a aligned potential from some source, it's lambda to the fourth cosine, A plus QB. And so this Q is the alignment parameter where the linear combination that you're making heavy has much more of Q than, much more of one of the axions than the other one. So this this aligned contribution is what gives you this clockwork mechanism.
Is it still coupled in the GD model?
So this is a toy. This is a toy example. So FA could be glue here, for example.
Do they have to be different, or
These two?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what you're trying to do here is to say I have two gauge groups, and can I get the coupling of one axion to them to be hierarchical? So you want you. This is like the model is supposed to model two different gauge groups. You could build any sort of model and play with it, but the particular thing you're trying to do here is to with two different gauge groups. This is the only construction. The massless mode that's left massless by this term winds around the two-dimensional axion space in the following way. So its effective field range is larger by a factor of Q, roughly, if FA and FB were commensurate. And the massless mode is this linear combination of A and B. And so if you see what its couplings to FA and FB are, they're indeed hierarchical with a factor of Q. So this is a two. This is what Kim, Nilles, and Peloso did with two aligned axions, and the idea of clockwork is to do this not with two but multiple axions, and you get to exponentiate this factor of Q to the n. So even though you start with charges in your theory which are order one, like a charge of two or a charge of three, you do it multiple times, so then you exponentiate this factor of Q, and so you get exponentially larger couplings of one gauge group, of the axion to one gauge group relative to the other gauge group. And the fact that you get a larger field range also is useful for models of inflation, where you can get transplanckian field excursions, even though FA and FB themselves are subplanckian. So you just have a subplanckian two-dimensional field space, but then this path that winds around this field space has a length larger than M Planck, which is very useful for inflationary model building, for example. So this in a sense is the clockwork mechanism. So if there are any questions about this,
is the massless mode the one that sets the potential?
The thing that sets the potential. So you this particular linear combination is set to zero. So that's the thing that gets the mass.
Okay, so that's the mass.
That is the massive mode.
Yeah.
And the ortho, yeah, because that's the one that's driven to zero by the potential.
Yeah.
The orthogonal mode to that is the massless mode. Okay, so so now after that, I'm going to move on to moving this moving target space towards larger value of FA using dark photon production. So now I'm back to a QCD axion. So this is a QCD axion that couples to glue tilde, and it couples to a new dark photon with this coupling. So I have an axion in my model, and I have a dark radiation model with some dark photon, and this coupling is parameterized by some number beta. So in the early universe now, as the axion starts oscillating, it depletes energy into this dark radiation. And it does it quite efficiently. And the way to see it is the following. I can write down the equation of motion for these dark photons in this time-dependent axion background. And this is what, in conformal time, its equation of motion looks like for polarizations plus and minus. So there's the usual k squared term. But because of this axion term, I get an extra term in the dispersion relation for the photon. And so the effective frequency of this photon is given by this quantity. And you notice that this quantity, in fact, can get negative for a specific choice of polarization. So essentially, there's an instability in this dispersion relation. So these particular modes for which omega squared is negative grow exponentially from seed fluctuations. And so this exponential growth efficiently depletes energy away from the oscillating axion. And so even though you started with energy density that was too much, you deplete it away into dark radiation. The dark radiation redshifts away, and it gives you viable cosmology. So this mechanism is
the time variation of the answer?
Yes, so these primes are conformal time derivatives. So this is just a particular k mode. I've done a Fourier transform in space. So this is a particular k mode, and it's equation of motion.
This goes back to a long, long time.
This is I think, I don't know, probably the first places that this appears is preheating or post-inflationary literature. But this is a very old, this is a very old idea. It's an old idea, at least in quality. I don't know what is the exact historical origin of this particular coupling, because this happens to be more, so people usually had phi squared, chi squared kind of couplings with one of.
Oh, I saw it exactly in that form. People try to say, okay, if you take a quintessence, couple it to photons this way, you roll, let it roll, and then you generate magnetic fields through this instability.
And this is 90s, you're saying? Yeah, okay. I think the preheating literature, so maybe for magnetic fields, that's what they do. For the preheating literature, that's usually not coupling to photons necessarily.
I'm not sure it works for radial photons because of the plasma frequency.
Right.
For dark photons, surely will.
Right. So yeah, but it is an old idea. I should maybe track down what the first references are. But
it might be that the Lagrangian appears in the cosmological literature, and that appears in sort of the inflation ones for different reasons.
That, yeah, it could be.
They don't appear somewhere or not.
No, they didn't appear in this for this particular application, at least. I'm sure the idea itself of tachyonic particle production is well known. I mean, Landau and Lifshitz have something, so this is not unrelated. Good. So this is our equation. And what is that? What? When do we get efficient particle production? The first thing what we need is beta to be large. The reason we need beta to be large is that the typical k mode that's tachyonic here is roughly given by beta times ma. If you just solve the quadratic and see what is the frequency that's most negative. So the growth rate of these instabilities is set by this parameter beta times ma roughly. And the oscillation frequency of the axion is ma. So if beta is much smaller than 1, then the axion oscillates and switches sign here much more rapidly than the growth rate of these instabilities. And so you don't get any growth, any appreciable growth. And so if beta is much bigger than 1, then even in one oscillation of the axion, you get a large amount of growth in the, of these k modes. And so, so one condition that is absolutely necessary for any sizable effect is beta much greater than one. And this maybe we'll see later also requires clock working. This you cannot do this perturbatively.
So beta is the coupling to the FF2.
Beta was the coupling to the FF2. And the second thing that Maxime already alluded to is that you need a tiny or no thermal mass for the dark photon. Otherwise, the mass would appear here. And so, for example, why couldn't you use R photon to do this? Why did we need a dark photon? It was because a mass term that would appear here would be order the temperature of the bath, whereas these K scales are order the Hubble scale. Mass of the axion is around the Hubble scale when it starts oscillating. So these K modes are around the Hubble scale, whereas the thermal mass is around the temperature scale. So the thermal mass completely quenches any of this instability. And so you do need to use a dark photon for this particular mechanism to work.
So you're saying that the dark photon is much cooler than the...
Well, the dark photon wasn't thermalized at all.
It wasn't thermalized.
This is something that only talks to this axion, and this is the only way it's produced. And there are no dark charged particles. So even if there was a bath of dark photons with some temperature,
this is the only way to produce.
Well, even if there was a primordial bath, that's probably not a problem, because you just don't want a plasma mass. That's what you want to avoid. So this is what the results look like. So here I've made an approximation that I'll describe in a second. I hope you can see the lines clearly.
But if you had a thermal bath, you would produce the charged particle, right? Pair production. So you would eventually end up just populating.
Well, it depends. If they're much heavier than when this is happening, then they could have decoupled and annihilated away. And so let's say this is happening at a GeV temperature, and only charged particles in my system are TeV and higher. So they could have completely decoupled, and they're not going to produce anymore. No, right. You just can't have no charged particle up to weak gravity, whatnot. But even that, if you take that seriously, the mass scales could be much higher than GeV. So there's no reason to have charged particles. Okay, so this is a plot of the axion field itself, scaled up with some factors. There's a scale factor so that the amplitude stays constant in the regular QCD. So the gray line shows what happens to the axion in the usual QCD axion story. It just starts oscillating with increasing frequency with a constant amplitude in this units. Whereas for us, this green line shows what happens when you turn on this coupling to the dark photon, where it tracks the initial phi oscillation. It tracks what happens without the coupling. And at some point, the amount of dark photons becomes so large that they efficiently take away energy from the axion, and the amplitude drops down to something much smaller. And you see in this co-moving energy plot also the same thing, that by co-moving energy density, I mean just energy density multiplied by appropriate factors of A to make them constant. So dark matter is multiplied by A cubed, then dark photon by 8^4, just so that they can put them on the same plot. And so the usual QCD axion again has some constant line here, this gray line. Our axion coupled to dark photon tracks this line, but at some point its energy density quenches and then becomes much smaller, depletes by as much as a factor of 10^5 before this process turns off, and then it again becomes a dark matter candidate that redshifts like A cubed. And the dark photon itself is getting exponentially populated from below, and then at some point it reaches roughly saturation, and then it stays at this value. So there is local energy conservation here. I've rescaled all the, like, this is by A cubed and this by 8^4, and so that's not apparent. But even within the levels of the wiggles, if you plot the sum of them, it's just a smooth energy conserving total energy density. Yeah, so indeed, if for time scales much smaller than the Hubble, there's perfect energy conservation. So you can actually start with energy densities which are much larger than the lambda CDM energy densities, and very quickly, in a space of, you know, by 20 MeV or so, before 20 MeV, depleted to around the values lambda CDM requires. In all of this, I've treated the axion as a spatially constant background field with only time dependence, which is producing these different k modes of the photons. And at some point, this approximation breaks down when there's enough photons produced that multi-photon scattering back into axions actually becomes important. And at some point, this becomes important. So these gentlemen have done. When that actually happens, you can't track it semi-analytically like I was doing before in the plots I showed you. But you actually have to run a lattice simulation with putting axions as well as dark photons on a lattice of k vectors and then evolving them numerically. And this is a somewhat expensive numerical exercise. So these gentlemen have done a lattice study for the QCD axion case. And what they find is that this parameter beta, as a function of this parameter beta, you do indeed get a depletion as you increase beta. But at some point, this effect saturates. And after that, you don't actually get a depletion. And so this is the point where the backscattering of photons into axions is becoming so important that you don't essentially lose any axions into dark photons.
This beta is your beta?
This beta is the same beta, yeah. I think I'm not sure factors of two or no, but our betas were order tens, and so I think it's the same beta. And of course, as we said, for beta less than 10, you see that there's no effect on the number. Sorry, I should have said the number density. The y-axis is number density in this model relative to number density in the usual QCD case. So since it's hard to run simulations for our entire parameter space, it's not clear exactly what the boundary of f's you can get is. But the conclusion is that f of 10 to the 15 GeV is the maximum f you can go to. And if you're at larger f's, the initial axion energy density is so much that it's hard to deplete it using this mechanism.
Does your semi-analytic agree at like beta of 20 with the system?
Would
you get a degree with that?
Yeah. So I mean, they have places where the backscattering never becomes important, and there it agrees we just run it without. If the k modes don't contribute to the energy density, then we have the right answer.
No, I'm just more about the lattice simulation. So I want to see if they.
Oh. Yeah. No. I think it's. I think it's trustworthy, although yeah it is. I don't think this is as. I don't think these simulations are at the same level of maturity as people who are doing axion production from strings, for example. So, but there's some of these people are the same people, so they're. I think they're somewhat robust, I would say. Although I'm not an expert.
Is that a rise, you know, towards very high ratios, more than one? Like, you know, was that real or is that?
Yeah, I don't think it's real. Yeah. Okay, so let me move on to the case of the dark photon dark matter. Here we are imagining that spin one particles, very light particles or fields, make up dark matter. And it's an amusing fact that for the current dark matter abundance, the dark electric field actually is about the electric field in a socket. So if you had a dark plug, you could just hold it up and you can charge your cell phone with dark matter. It's interesting because it has some common but sometimes complementary probes to the axion. So some experiments can look for both dark photons, dark matter, as well as axion dark matter. But other experiments are only sensitive to one or the other, or different sensitivities to one or the other. And it's been an open question of how to populate dark photon dark matter in most of its parameter space in some way, in some sense. And so there are mechanisms to populate using inflation, and there's some tuned mechanism to populate by coupling to curvature, so let me not dwell on this, but this mechanism to use inflation to populate it only works for dark photons of masses above a certain scale. And so here in this plot, I've taken two example models of dark photon dark matter. One is where it's a B minus L gauge boson. The other where it's a kinetically mixed dark photon mixed with the mixed with our photon. And on the x-axis is, again, the mass of the dark photon. And these black and red curves are showing where this inflationary mechanism actually works to populate dark photon dark matter if the if Hubble scale is at the current limit of 10 to the 14 GeV around, or if R becomes the limit on R becomes 0.002, where this black curve moves to the red curve if that's the case, if Hubble happens to be smaller. And if Hubble is much smaller than those numbers, then we have no mechanism to populate it anywhere on this plot. And so there's all this wide parameter space which experiments can look for. It could be dark matter, and it's in some sense just a binary choice whether it's spin zero or spin one for bosonic fields. So you could argue the spin zero are more motivated, but it seems like a question worth attacking to try and get the right relic abundance for light, dark photon, dark matter.
So you have visa LIGO in this park.
So what the gravitational wave detectors here do is the way to use them is to imagine in the following way: that in the background electric field, which is oscillating with the frequency given by the mass of dark photon, these mirrors would feed a force because
so this is not a electric field, this is B minus L, so the mirrors are charged on
those. Yeah, by electric I mean electric, but every electric, I mean, yeah. So there's a B minus L electric.
Mirrors have a charge.
Right. So the mirrors have a net charge under this field, and so under this field they oscillate, they'll feel a oscillating force, again, proportional to that frequency. And the amount of dark matter around us is very small, but again, these are very sensitive experiments. So this is what, so you can try and pick out that extra, that frequency that's going to be present always over the noise. And then that's what these estimates come from. Any other questions? Good. So we're going to use the same mechanism as particle production to populate dark photon dark matter as well. So that's the idea. So now we have our dark photons, which are now massive. So they have some mass, and we add a coupling of the dark photon to an axion, just like before, parameterized by beta. And this axion could be the QCD axion, or it could just be some other axion-like particle. It doesn't really matter for the purpose of this mechanism. Initially, you store the energy density in the axion. You just misalign the axion from its minimum, and that's where the energy density is stored. If you did that to the dark photon, of course, you can't store energy density in a vector particle that just decays away in cosmology. So you store the energy density in a scalar earlier. And again, as the axion starts to oscillate, it dumps most of its energy density into these dark photons, which are now massive, so they redshift, but then they become matter, and then they behave as dark matter. So the equation of motion for the dark photon again is the same, but now it contains this term, which comes from just the mass term.
So the difference now is this massive, right? Because before you said you don't get all the energy density in the photons, but there was some dark matter left over at some
point. Right. So it'll, yeah. Exactly. So first the number density, but I'll come to your question in the next slide, I think. But I guess this also answers it a little bit. So this is again plotting the number density of axions in blue and dark photons in red relative to their case where I don't couple them together. And so again, you see that the axion number density does what it's supposed to do usually, but at some point in time, it drops down. It settles down to a value about 1%. So you don't get rid of all of that, all of the axions, but you deplete them down to a percent of what they were supposed to be. And the photons, the photons take over around this point. So there's this. This is the production of dark photons, and these different dashed and solid, the solid and dashed curves show the values for different assumptions of relative sizes of m gamma prime to m axion, and so that there is some variation depending on what exact values you choose. And you can see that if m gamma prime is much smaller than m axion, then there are some number of axion particles left over. So the dark photons would just redshift away, and you'd be just left with axion dark matter again. Dark photons would not be dark matter, but if these are comparable as they are here, then the dark photons can dominate the energy density, and you have a subdominant energy density into axions. Right. So here, I want to see what masses of dark photons can I get away with. So again, as we said before, the typical K for tachyonic growth is around beta times ma. And here you see that in the spectrum that the dark photon peak of the in the spectrum is around few tens times ma here. So beta is around beta for this is 40. So the peak is around 20 times ma. So if again, if the mass of the dark photon is much bigger than the mass of the axion, then these K modes will no longer be tachyonic, and this instability will get quenched. So the mass of the dark photon is bounded above to be not much bigger than the axion mass. In fact, it should be smaller. And if it's much smaller, as we said before, it redshifts too much, and so you're left with axion dark matter. So you need some sort of coincidence so that the mass of the dark photon and axion are close to each other. And here this is shown in as relative relic abundances of axion and dark photon as a function of the ratio of their masses. And so dark photons can be most of dark matter for around this range of masses. So it's about an order of magnitude coincidence you need. But if dark photons are much heavier, then this process is inefficient and you get axion dark matter. Or if dark photons are much lighter, then they redshift away and you're left with mostly axion dark matter again. So what are the conditions that you require for this to be true? First, you need the coincidence of mass scales, as we said, m gamma prime should be around and somewhat less than m gamma ma. You need this large coupling beta that you always need for any application of the particle production. You always need a coupling with beta which is much bigger than one. Beta can be parameterized as following. There's always a factor of alpha over 8 pi that appears because it's a coupling of axion to gauge field. So just from the quantization of axion discrete symmetry, this is an alpha over 8 pi that appears in the coupling. And you could have two possible sources of enhancement, which I've labeled k and j here. There, these k and j are integers. So k here just depends on what charges you have put in your theory. So if you have some particle with a very large charge, it gives you enhanced coupling of the axion to photons. So that's k, and j is the enhancement integer that you get from clock working, as we were discussing. There's this factor q that we called it there. So in general, beta is given by this k j alpha kind of parameterization, and particularly there's a limit that if you want your theory to not hit a Landau pole right away, you want k alpha to be less than one, roughly speaking. So you see that just by having large charges in your theory, you can never get beta to be much larger than one. You always need some amount of clockwork to get. So every time people talk about this kind of particle production, there's implicitly some sort of clockwork going on behind the scenes. There's a maximum amount of clockwork one can get, which is set basically by unitarity. So the clockwork integer should be smaller than this ratio, which is quite large, but it should be smaller than this integer in order to not violate unitarity. The mass of the axion should not become larger than its fundamental period. So, so the large coupling beta is something that needs explaining. And then finally, one could ask about what the origin of the dark photon mass is, whether it's a Higgs.
Is this a unique way? You don't seem to have a huge enhancement in this F of dual coupling, right?
Right.
You can imagine, like, I don't know, 100 fermionic fields that are not charged under this, not a Abelian gauge group, but only under this dark photon gauge group.
But the dark photon gauge group alpha is the thing that appears here. So K alpha is the thing that will run very quickly.
It wouldn't work.
No. Because yeah, you just hit the Landau pole right away. So,
okay.
So you really need something that looks naively like too big to get from weak coupling.
Okay.
And that's why clockwork is interesting as a mechanism to get you that.
So there is no simple way around.
Yeah. Charges are number of flavors. That's right. You could also say it's number of flavors.
Okay.
And you can ask whether the origin of the dark photon mass is through a Higgs mechanism or a Stueckelberg mechanism. I don't know. I think depending on which one you choose, there could be consequences, and there could be different consequences.
Well, if it's a Higgs mechanism, you may not need any of these experiments because you already have so strong constraints in many cases.
Yes. Yeah. So that is. I guess my next slide. Right. So if you have a Higgs mechanism, you have to make sure the Higgs is heavy enough. And so you're always in this region where the Higgs is decoupled and the gauge coupling is small so that you get a light dark photon. And I'll try to argue that you're basically forced into that in any dark photon dark matter model. So if there are quartic couplings, so I just wrote down the mass coupling of this dark photon, but there's no shift symmetry protecting it anymore, so there should be a quartic coupling that I could write down. If there's a quartic coupling, then it affects phenomenology quite drastically. If there was a Higgs mechanism, then I would expect a quartic coupling just coming from a Higgs exchange, and that quartic coupling is roughly of the size of G dark to the fourth or alpha dark squared, something like this, up to order one factors, up to the charge of the Higgs, which in simple modulus is order one, is one or two, and the quartic of the Higgs, which is less than 4 pi. So we expect a non-trivial quartic in the dark photons at the level of G dark to the fourth. And even generically, if you think of the Eaton-Goldstone of the dark photon, there you expect, in its Lagrangian, you expect a coupling, a quartic coupling which goes like M gamma to the fourth over F, where F is the F to the fourth, where F is its decay constant of this Eaton-Goldstone. So what does this quartic do? This self-energy can, in principle, shut off particle production. Since this quartic costs energy, a positive quartic costs energy, so then it would, as soon as the energy density in this quartic term becomes as important as the mass term, you expect that it would actually back react strongly on this particle production, and you would actually shut off the production. And so there's a limit of what quartic you can tolerate to get particle production. Which is given by this, where I've used the fact that the energy density in the dark photon is roughly the energy density in the axion when the oscillations start. And in fact, a condensate of the dark photons gives a positive mass contribution to the Higgs itself that's giving it the mass. So it back reacts on the Higgs and it can restore the symmetry of the Higgs. And for that not to happen, again, this is a constraint that the quartic the mass of the Higgs around the minimum is not very is much larger than the effective mass it gets out of the gauge boson condensate. So there's a number of constraints that come from just asking that I've just taken the mass terms here. I've ignored the quartics and self interactions, but these are large field densities, and so self interactions can be important, and they do give me strong constraints of how big a quartic I can tolerate. So now you can go and play with the parameter space, but here I'm showing you some example parameters that work. And so it's actually hard to get a large G dark. This constraint on the quartic translates into a very strong constraint on G dark in most models. And so these are some example parameters. You can play with them, but it's very hard to get qualitatively different conclusions. What you see is that the VEV of the dark Higgs has to be relatively small, not very, it has to be larger than like about a GeV. And to get very light dark photons, that translates into a very tiny gauge coupling, around 10 to the minus 15 or so, for these masses of dark photon and axions. And so for our case, remember beta was kj alpha, and j was bounded by this parameter. What we need, if g dark is 10 to the minus 15, is kj to be around 10 to the 30, and j is bounded by 10 to the 15. This is what j happens to be for these values. And so k also needs to be around 10 to the 15, at least. So this model building to actually get this to work is rather baroque. At the effective field theory level, it looks completely fine, but you need some particles of charge 10 to the 15 in your theory. And you need this clock working also to be super large in order for this whole thing to fly. And again, for example, the back reaction of the Higgs has nothing to do with our mechanism. This is just a constraint on any dark photon model that comes from a Higgs. So in general, for very light dark photon, you should worry about what it's going to do to when you think about the quartic couplings of the Higgs and the back reaction of the dark photon.
You can't supervert it because of the clockwork?
The question is, you can say by Stueckelberg, if you mean I'm going to ignore all quartics, then
what's the mass of the dark photon in the end? Of the dark Higgs in the end?
So the mass of the dark Higgs here was 1 GeV or higher. We put it somewhere so that it's not astrophysically produced and whatnot.
Well, wouldn't you just expect inflationary generation of that in the first place?
Of the dark Higgs itself, and then have to deplete it,
which would then possibly dominate the whole energy density? No?
Well, the dark Higgs can decay, presumably, to dark photons.
Is it good though, or not? I mean, the coupling is small, it can decay late, right?
Yeah, we didn't think about that, but you could push these parameters even further, I guess. But these were, you're saying if the dark Higgs itself produces,
it smells like a GeV scale particle with a very small coupling. Wow, that has consequences. You gotta pay.
But remember, but the gauge couplings are small. But remember, there's a large we're getting axion FF coupling, FF dual coupling to be order one, so k is making up for these. So if you calculate the Higgs loop to two photons, there's the enhancement of K, which is, but we haven't checked. It's exactly K alpha was pushed to one here. That was what the, So for our mechanism to work, certainly you need these numbers which look quite ugly. But also, I think the interesting thing maybe is that this is something to worry about for any dark photon model. To think about if there really is a Higgs, what is the quartic doing, and are you restoring the symmetry with this large field density? But it does look like the model building gets really baroque. If you try to UV complete it, you could just say Stueckelberg and not write down any quartics. There's nothing inconsistent about that theory. So even Stueckelberg, I don't know what Stueckelberg means. If you UV complete in any theory that you know of, you always get these quartics. Okay, so with that, let me conclude. I think the discovery frontier is an exciting place. We are in an era where we don't really know there's a leading candidate for where the new physics is going to come from. So it's exciting to look for places where we have not looked before. And I've tried to highlight new mechanisms one in field theory, which is clockwork, and one in cosmology, which is particle production, and how these new mechanisms, and they're interrelated, as I showed. These new mechanisms keep getting invoked in many different applications. And I've shown you a couple of them here, where you can open up new parameter space for axions or make light, dark photon, dark matter viable. Thank you.
Other questions?
The thought of generating large-scale magnetic fields using dark photons. It's less energy that you require.
And then convert them into photons by some resonance?
Once you multiply them by epsilon, they look like photons anyways, right?
So,
What's that?
I think there's a recent URL on this. That's
not URL or nature doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if they do dark photons, but people have been trying, of course, to do this magnetic field generation from this axion just after inflation for a while.
I'm just saying that with dark photons, you're not subjected to all this plasma quenching or nothing, right? And which can make it sort of appear
right.
In the deep infrared. Right?
Yeah, this is true. So, and they're kinetically mixed with us, you're saying?
Yeah,
right.
I would push it to mass even smaller values, right? I mean, so that the
yeah, you can get basically the fuzzy dark matter.
Will be large, like
right.
The electric part of it will be probably screened, but the magnetic part will remain.
So you need some charged matter to screen it, but you can put something. So the question is, yeah, they can get charged matter to screen the electric part without thermalizing.
Multiply it by epsilon, right? It's all looking like electromagnetic fields, right? But the electric part will probably be screened.
So you have to worry whether the
normal matter.
Right. So you have to worry whether the multiplying by epsilon doesn't give you a thermal mass also. So there, because you're comparing thermal mass with again temperature versus Hubble, epsilon temperature.
2 degrees of freedom, right? And the thermal mass will be one, right? I mean,
but
the plasma mass, right? I don't have any particles charged under this.
Right. And so, but it would still screen electric fields both are.
I would naively say it would still screen the electric field or overall electric field, right? But probably not the magnetic part.
What
would screen electric field?
So imagine two massless dark photons. And you produce dark photons from this mechanism, but there is epsilon mixing. So the standard model particle is our epsilon charged under the dark.
Oh, the standard model particles. Okay.
And so I haven't thought about it.
But
it could work.
The evidence for magnetic field is also very indirect, right? It's not like you go with whatever with magnetic field with the loop and measure it, right? I mean, it's a back reaction on particle propagation. And,
so it could just be very dark.
Measures, right? I mean, you could try to.
So is there any other? So you're saying it could be much larger magnetic fields in dark sector. They're just appearing as whatever strength they're appearing with epsilons. There's no and there's no constraint on those such a large magnetic field in the dark sector.
Well, I'm just suggesting we go further to the left in your plots, right? And instead of saturating the dark matter, just play with the subdominant component, but then it has a long coherence length. Perhaps.
Yeah, that's a good point. I haven't thought about it. Yeah, it would be worth looking into. You would still need this kind of. Because it, so, by the way, this is
unfortunate.
This is not terrible for B minus L dark photon dark matter, because the gauge couplings anyway are of the order 10 to the minus 24 what you can see, and 10 to the minus 20 that you can see, or and they're constrained to be very strong. But if you want
B minus L gives coherent forces between barons, I don't want that.
No, not for your case. I'm just saying in general. But for the kinetically mixed dark photon, if G dark is really this small. You need to really to get epsilon of 10 to the minus 8 or something is really hard also.
Okay.
And so you need large charge particles also to get. If you want a kinetically mixed dark photon, you usually need large charge particles to get a big kinetic mixing, because alphas are probably very small. So I think the fact that the alphas are small just from this back reaction thing is I think interesting.
It's very Baroque model. G dark is tiny, right? But epsilon.
Yeah, so it's exactly this K alpha. Epsilon is basically K alpha again, and so that you have to make large.
Yeah,
it's even a problem without a clockwork, because it's just this thing is always present, even without the particle production. It's just saying that you have a large condensate density. The mass is really small, but your field values are large. So this thing do not. overturn the Higgs broken potential and restore your symmetry, in which case you become massless and complicated dynamics happens. In order to keep, to not do that, this condition should be true, and that's a constraint on the quartic.
So what is the problem? I thought that the, it's because you wanted it to be the dark matter here. Whereas if it's not the dark matter, would it be a problem restoring temporarily the symmetry? Because this would be the way quite quickly, I suppose.
Yeah, in fact, if you don't need it to be dark matter, then you don't even need a mass term, presumably.
And
if you really just do dark photons.
Turning to all these multiple papers that came at the same time with yours, are there any proposals that are less baroque in terms of model building? They're all sort of along the same line.
There is a proposal which is not one of these papers. So these all came to the same time, and they're roughly trying to do the same thing. I haven't gone through them in very much detail to really suss out it, because sometimes they're less than clear exactly what is happening. There's some assumptions. I don't think any of them are less baroque than these. There is another idea that came afterwards, was to produce these dark photons from string, from U1 strings, from topological production. So if you make, in the early universe, if you make strings of these, if this U1 gauge field, they would also produce these dark photons just like axions are produced. And they also needed some funky model parameters, I think. But I don't think it's the same parametrics anymore. It's just a different mechanism.
So if I went away this Borel constructions, I should conclude that the dark photons should be, if it's dark matter, should be sort of 10 to the minus 6 eV and heavier, right?
Or even heavier than that. Yeah, I mean,
so,
he's now nodding now, but if I say eV and heavier, he'll stop nodding. So that's...
Okay.
I think dark photon, dark matter, as a result of this whole thing, I think, is much less motivated than axion dark matter to produce, but also just, I think you have to worry about...
Well, if it's heavy, then it's fine, right? If it's KV or EV, then it's fine. There's nothing wrong. Just have a normal inflation.
Yeah, KV, EV is fine. I guess it's in a place where it's particle dark matter. It's not, yeah. So in the sense of the bosonic field space of less than EV, it seems like axions are seem better in that region. And now EV versus 10 to the minus 3 for EV is relevant for experiments, of course. But most of the, yeah, most below 10 to the minus 6 EV, I think it's just hard to make them, and it requires quite a bit of work.
Other questions?
Thank you.